Hey Mason, July 9th, 2026. We have a lot to cover today, starting with a quick radar briefing on the newest research coming out of the language modeling labs, and then we will move into our week in review.
Are we actually seeing any new breakthroughs in low-resource language processing this week, or is it more of the same?
It is actually quite interesting, because there is a new paper on how we can use synthetic data to bridge the gap for smaller linguistic communities without losing cultural nuance.
That sounds promising, but I am always skeptical about how much of that nuance actually survives the training process.
That is exactly what we are looking at in this first radar briefing. Mason, the research filter has pulled a few items that feel particularly relevant to our work on language sovereignty and reliable pipelines.
Let's see if they actually move the needle or if it is just more general large language model hype.
I think there is some real substance here regarding how we handle low-resource languages and complex scripts.
Start with the technical side of the retrieval process, since that is the backbone of our current build.
Felix Feldman and his colleagues published a study on using retrieval augmented generation for public health questions, and what matters to us is their systematic evaluation of how retrieval quality and faithfulness actually impact the final answer.
That is crucial because if our grounding in community-approved books is flawed, the whole system fails the sovereignty test.
Exactly, and that connects to a broader theme of linguistic diversity and cultural preservation found in a paper by Aparna Madhva and several others.
Are they just talking about diversity in a vague sense, or are they looking at the actual technical hurdles?
They are looking at the intersection of cultural heritage and the specific challenges of building artificial intelligence for underrepresented languages.
That is a much more useful lens for us than just a diversity checklist.
It also ties into how we handle different writing systems, like the work by Berte Bayarsaykin on cognitive pivot translation for Mongolian.
Wait, is that dealing with the traditional script?
Yes, it addresses how to handle translation when you have a digraphic language, which means it uses two different scripts, and the ambiguity that comes with that.
That sounds like a direct parallel to the orthography challenges we face with Lakota.
It is, and we see similar themes in a study by Lukmal Ilyas and Nevidu Jayatilake regarding cross-lingual transfer learning for speech recognition in languages like Sinhala and Divehi.
So they are finding ways to use data from one language to help another?
Precisely, which is the kind of data-efficient adaptation we need.
But we have to be careful that the transfer does not introduce errors that feel culturally wrong.
That is where the work by Andrea Alfarano and his team comes in, because they studied how reasoning in English can actually improve performance in low-resource languages, but they also looked at how to estimate uncertainty in those models.
If the model is uncertain, we need to know so we do not present a hallucination as a community truth.
Right, and finally, Darina Dementieva and her team are looking at extending mathematical reasoning evaluations beyond high-resource languages through a project called Plurimath.
It seems like the common thread here is that the current benchmarks are just not built for the reality of the languages we actually care about.
That is the core of it, Mason, looking back at everything we have tracked this week, a very clear pattern is emerging that moves us away from just asking if a model is smart and toward asking if a model is actually trustworthy and culturally grounded.
It feels like the honeymoon phase of just seeing if a large language model can speak a language is over. And now we are getting into the messy, difficult work of making sure it does not lie or erase cultural nuance.
Exactly, and that tension between raw capability and actual reliability is the heartbeat of this week's research. We saw this in the discussion on Indic AI and cultural heritage preservation earlier this week, where the focus was on how these models must respect the specificities of a culture, rather than just treating a language as a data problem.
Right, and that connects directly to the work on the Mongolian traditional script, specifically the paper on cognitive pivot translation. They are dealing with a digraphic system, which means two different writing systems for one language, and that kind of orthographic complexity is exactly what makes standard models fail.
It is a perfect example of why we cannot just use English-centric logic. If the model does not understand the relationship between the scripts, the meaning is lost. We saw a similar struggle in the paper on medieval Latin manuscripts, which we also covered, where the researchers found that sometimes simpler, more specialized pipelines for optical character recognition are actually more faithful than massive general-purpose models.
That is a huge point for your work with Lakota, Mason. The idea that a massive model might actually be less reliable for legacy texts than a smaller, more focused system is a vital takeaway.
It really is, and that leads us into the massive surge in retrieval augmented generation research we saw this week. It is not just about finding information anymore, it is about the architecture of truth.
I noticed that. There was a lot of focus on where exactly a retrieval augmented generation pipeline breaks. we had the triage paper which we discussed, looking at stage-aware instrumentation to find exactly where a failure happens.
And then you have the work by Mohamed Albouke on detecting hallucinations through grounding-aware sensitivity. He is looking at how sensitive a model is to the actual evidence provided. If you perturb the evidence and the model's answer doesn't change, it was probably hallucinating from its own internal weights rather than actually reading the document.
That sounds like a nightmare for community-governed data. If the community provides a sacred text as the ground truth, but the model ignores it and pulls from its training data instead, the whole purpose of the system is defeated.
Precisely. That is why the paper André Alsley and Sequin Yuprosh. They are looking at how to defend long-form retrieval augmented generation against misinformation pollution. It is about ensuring the model stays anchored to the provided context.
But how do we apply that to low-resource languages where the context itself might be thin?
That is the million-dollar question. We saw a paper by Haotian Zhou and colleagues that addresses exactly that, looking at English evidence cross-lingual retrieval augmented generation. They are using teacher-regularized reinforcement learning to make sure the model actually uses the evidence provided, even when it is working across languages.
So it is not just about having the right data, but about forcing the model to respect that data during the reasoning process.
Yes, and we have to consider the evaluation side of that. We saw the Pluramath paper, which argues that we need to extend mathematical reasoning evaluations beyond high-resource languages. If we only test reasoning in English, we are assuming that logic is a universal constant that transfers perfectly, but we know that is not always the case in practice.
It is a bit of a circular problem, isn't it? We need better evaluation to prove the models work, but we need the models to work to create the evaluation data.
It is, and that is why the work on creating high-quality, manually annotated datasets, like the Sinhala Market dataset for sentiment analysis, is so critical. You cannot automate your way out of the need for human-in-the-loop expertise, especially when you are dealing with dialectal variations.
Speaking of dialects, the paper on multimodal feature fusion for Indian languages was interesting because it tried to combine different types of data to better identify dialects. It suggests that text alone might not be enough to capture the nuance of how people actually speak.
That is a vital insight for speech recognition. We saw that in the work on Sinhala and Divehi, where they used cross-lingual transfer learning to help low-resource speech recognition. They are essentially trying to borrow the knowledge of a high-resource language to bolster a low-resource one.
But is there a risk of linguistic imperialism there? If we use English or even a dominant regional language to teach a smaller language, do we accidentally bake the dominant language's patterns into the smaller one?
That is a very sharp critique, and it is exactly what the researchers in the Indic AI paper were warning about. If the transfer learning is too aggressive, you lose the unique phonetic or grammatical structures of the target language.
It seems like the theme of the week is a move toward granularity. We are moving from can it speak Lakota to can it recognize the specific nuances of this specific Lakota dialect in this specific historical script without hallucinating.
That is a great way to put it. We saw that granularity in the Hunyuan OCR work, which uses an agentic data construction system to improve optical character recognition for ancient scripts. They are not just throwing more images at the problem, they are being much more intentional about how they build the training data.
It reminds me of the work on EFIC, the African language where they are using text-to-speech for digital preservation. It is a very specific, targeted application of technology to save a culture.
And that is the goal. Whether it is the LuxQA paper using synthetic augmentation for Luxembourgish or the BACTheo benchmark for Bangla form comprehension, the trend is toward building tools that are highly specialized for the specific constraints of the language and the task.
So, if I am looking at my roadmap for next week, what should be the main takeaway?
I would say, watch the intersection of faithfulness and cross-lingual transfer. We have a lot of papers saying we can transfer knowledge from English to a low-resource language, but we are also seeing a growing body of work saying the transfer is often unfaithful or loses the local context.
So the real challenge is not just the transfer, but the grounding of that transfer.
Exactly. For your work with Lakota Mason, the takeaway is that as you build these retrieval augmented generation pipelines, the evaluation must be per stage. You cannot just look at the final answer. You have to look at the retrieval quality, the faithfulness of the evidence, and the sensitivity of the model to the community-approved texts you are providing.
It sounds like the safety in speech safety is actually about informational integrity.
That is a perfect description. If the model is not faithful to the source, it is not safe for the community. This week has proven that the technical hurdles of low-resource NLP are increasingly becoming problems of cultural and informational stewardship.
It makes the work feel much heavier, but also much more necessary.
It is heavy work, but the research is finally catching up to the reality of the stakes. We are moving past the era of can it do it, and into the era of can it be trusted to do it right. We have covered a massive amount of ground today, from the nuances of cultural heritage preservation in Indic artificial intelligence to the technical hurdles of cross-lingual speech recognition for languages like Sinhala and Devehi.
It really highlights how much work remains to make these models truly global and reliable, especially when we factor in mathematical reasoning and complex document understanding.
Exactly, and that is the core of our mission. That is all for this week, Mason.